You're listening to UK Confidential 1984. We're reviewing the government papers from that year that have just been released to the public. In December 1984, a rising star in the Soviet Politburo paid his first visit to Britain and had a legendary five-hour meeting with Mrs. Thatcher at Chequers. She famously said afterwards that Mikhail Gorbachev was a man she could do business with. For the first time, we can find out why.
By the end of 1984, East-West relations were in a pretty poor shape.
Charles Powell was Mrs. Thatcher's private secretary for foreign affairs and defence in 1984.
Negotiations between the Americans and the Russians in Geneva on arms control had broken off. We were dealing with a geriatric regime in the Soviet Union. It was not a happy picture at the time. And Margaret Thatcher was very keen to look ahead and look to a new generation of Soviet leaders who she thought must be somewhere behind the scenes, whom we probably didn't know about.
Three names were selected, and Gorbachev was the first to accept the invitation. Discussions started over lunch, with notes taken by an interpreter sitting behind them. The papers provide a fascinating insight into their forthright argument over which country had the better economic system.
Would all this not be easier if you had free enterprise, with the provision of incentives and a free hand for local enterprises to run their own show, rather than being directed from the centre?
I don't think you can really believe that everything in the USSR is run from the centre.
But unless people can profit from their own efforts and raise their own standard of living, wealth won't be created.
I understand the British system, but the Soviet one is superior.
Discussion got a lot more heated when the Prime Minister manoeuvred the conversation round to some very worrying intelligence reports that the Russians were bankrolling the miners' strike.
Do you really believe that Soviet communists are so strong as to be able to keep the British miners out on strike for over 10 months?
Some communist sympathisers within the trade union leadership have approved intimidation to put workers willing to work back on strike.
You can speak to me in this way only because you place such confidence in me. The problem is purely a British one.
The Soviet Union's fellow communists who cannot get their own way through their ballot box are opting for violence and are being helped with finance from outside.
Well, it's not from the Soviet Union. We have transferred no funds to the NUM, as far as I'm aware.
Margaret Thatcher's private secretary, Charles Powell.
And after lunch, we withdrew into a small drawing room at Chequers, and there was a meeting due to last, from memory, about an hour. Well, it ended up lasting about 2.5 to 3 hours. One of the most extraordinary things was the frankness with which they discussed nuclear weapons. After all, we had nuclear weapons, they had them, the Americans had them. They were at the heart of the Cold War. And there they were discussing them in a very frank, rather chilling manner.
I would like to show you something my advisors found for me. It's a full-page diagram from the New York Times, comparing the 3 million tons of explosives used in World War II with the 15 billion tons of explosive power now available to the superpowers. Only a fraction of this amount would be needed to bring about a nuclear winter.
I am not sure how relevant the concept of nuclear winter is when set against the destruction, incineration, and death which would precede it. The purpose of nuclear weapons is to deter war, but we could have that safety at a far lower level of weaponry than we have now.
If both sides continue to pile up weapons in ever-increasing quantities, it could lead to accidents and unforeseen circumstances. There is a Russian proverb that says, once in a year, even an unloaded gun can go off.
I think we knew in our hearts that this was a very important moment. It wasn't that Gorbachev laid out all his ideas in full. After all, you have to remember, he wasn't in charge of the Soviet Union at that stage. He was a callow young member of the Politburo. But it really was, I think you could say, a moment of hope. Nearly 30 years later, you see that this was, in a way, the turning point in the Cold War.
Lord Armstrong, that's quite a claim there, isn't it, that this visit was the turning point in the Cold War. Looking back, would you agree with Charles Pohl there?
I think I probably would, as it were, benefit of hindsight. And I remember talking to her after the Gorbachev meeting, and she had this strong feeling that he represented a change in Russia eventually, if he came through. I said, do you think this is the beginning of the end of the evil empire? And she said, well, maybe it is, but it will take a very long time. And I think she was as surprised as anybody when it all collapsed like a house of cards in the autumn of 89.
The thing that really changed the Cold War was the Star Wars, the Strategic Defence Initiative, Reagan thing, because the Soviet Union would have to match what the Americans were spending, and that would be the straw that broke the back of their economy. And that is largely what happened.
He didn't pretend to be, in any sense, an economic expert, but he, together with Alexander Yakovlev, a fellow member of the Politburo, understood there was a fundamental unsustainability about the Soviet economy. But in the minutes, it's there, for instance, that Gorbachev is acknowledging that if they didn't manage to meet economic and social requirements, the Soviet Union could be in difficulty. Nobody had ever said that, even in the most intimate discussions previously. So that is fundamental to understanding Gorbachev. And his personal charm and candor were employed, not with craftiness, but because they were utterly natural to him, in trying to gain understanding outside the Soviet Union so that he could use that understanding as a lever inside the Soviet Union.
Just looking at what the documents tell us, were you surprised, Lord Armstrong, by the frankness of the conversations between Margaret Thatcher and Mikhail Gorbachev for a first meeting?
I was very surprised when I read the account and heard from Mrs. Thatcher and from Charles Pohl. I had been at meetings between previous prime ministers and previous Soviet leaders, and there had been nothing like it at all.
We get one fantastic insight into the visit of Mikhail Gorbachev, and this is one of my favourite documents of all of the ones that released it from 1984. And this is the interpreter's view of the visit. It was a week long, and he recorded his impressions of the future Russian leader, noting,
"A roguish twinkle never far from his eye. He even once winked at me over his shoulder as I interpreted a neat parry of his to one of the Prime Minister's verbal thrusts."
But on a couple of other occasions, Gorbachev left Mr. Bishop with a chill impression when his unemotional mask slipped. One of these was during lunch with the leader of the opposition, Neil Kinnock, who'd pressed the issue of human rights in the Soviet Union.
This provoked an intemperate outburst of obscenities and threats by Gorbachev against turds and spies like Shevransky, who was in prison, and that is where he will stay. He warned, with appropriate gestures, that Britain would get it right in the teeth in a merciless denunciation of its human rights crimes if that was the game it wanted to play. With his usual adroitness, however, Gorbachev collected himself and told Mr. Kinnock that he'd never spoken so undiplomatically on the subject to anyone else during the visit, and that such frankness was only possible between people who referred to each other as comrade.
What was that like?
It was extraordinary, because Mr. Bishop, the interpreter, is a bit of a genius. And I'd said to him before I met Gorbachev, while we were waiting for him to come to lunch, that Gorbachev's language was known to be fairly fruity. So if he gave to me in those terms, I would be giving back to him in those terms. And I just wanted to make sure that Mr. Bishop had the Russian words for a few expletives that I might want to deploy. And he said, oh, I do assure you. And the Russian versions are even more graphic. And we did have this exchange, because I always pressed the case of the strangulation of and denial of human rights in the Soviet system. Gorbachev came back and started...
Exploded at you.
Absolutely. He did explode, and he started talking about Northern Ireland. And I said, well, I'm sorry, you've got on the wrong subject, because if you knew anything about Northern Ireland, you'd realise that the presence of uniforms and arms on the streets make it abnormal. But still, in Northern Ireland, You don't have to produce your card, you don't have to produce your passport, you don't have to produce your identity any time that somebody in uniform asks you for it. And there was a bit of a silence, and then he reverted to being the charming Mikhail, which I loved very much.
But the mask slipped a bit then.
It did slip a bit.
It was a controlled outburst.
Yes, of course.
I think he knew exactly what he was doing.
Very good acting. Mm.